Wing TV, with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani. The revolution is being televised.
Hello, it's Thursday, August 4th, and you're watching Wing TV. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. Before we bring our guest on today, we have to hit a real quick news story. Now, as most of you know, Hillary Clinton plans on running for election in 2008 for the presidency of the United States. The only problem is that her fundraisers don't seem to be going as well as she would like to, so she needs some money. So after some barnstorming or some brainstorming ideas, she ended up coming to a decision. She was going to open up some chicken restaurants or chicken shops across the country, sort of like Kentucky Fried Chicken. So when these open up here in the near future, there's going to be a commemorative event that's going to have a grand opening gala where there's going to be the Hillary special. Now, you're probably wondering, what's the Hillary special? Well, she's going to offer two fat thighs, two small breasts, and a left wing, all for the price of $4.99. Now, you can't beat that. That's the deal of the century, isn't it?
You're kind of obnoxious.
I told that to one of my buddies today, and he thought it was hilarious. So keep your eye open for the Hillary special. Also, we're going to appear tomorrow night on Visigoths from the Grassy Knoll radio show. That will start at 11 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. And also tomorrow on Wing TV, we're going to have our interview with Mark Farrell that was actually recorded last week before Wing TV went down. So that'll be the show that we film. It's either last Thursday or Friday, one of those two days.
Thursday.
Right. Now, today we have on our show Mr. Robert Raming. He's the author of this book, War and Death of the American Dream. And we're very pleased to bring him to Wing TV. How are you doing, Robert?
Hi, Robert.
I'm great, guys. How are you today?
Real good. Thanks. Well, let's jump right into this book here. And I was going to start from the beginning of it, but Chapter 20 deals with 9/11. And as I read through your chapter, I want to make something clear. Who do you think was ultimately behind the 9/11 terrorist attacks? Do you think it was Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, or do you think it was some other forces?
Well, I would like to say that I haven't fully and thoroughly investigated 9/11. What I would say is that what the government has done is incredibly suspicious. The way they've destroyed evidence, the way they've put out misinformation, the lies and the deceit. The situation at Popular Mechanics that you're probably familiar with, where there was a whole shakeup at that magazine, and then all of a sudden there's an article in Popular Mechanics about debunking all of the conspiracy theories of 9/11 and promoting some very bizarre conspiracy theories, and then to find out that Mr. Chertoff, who was the source behind that, was related to Michael Chertoff at Homeland Security. Again, the American people just have to be very, very suspicious about what is going on, and for me, it is the reason why I think people need to read my book, War and Death of the American Dream, because when you see a pattern of lies, deception, propaganda, and the same footprints in the snow over hundreds of years, over this entire last century, then the light, I think, will begin to go on for the American people that, wait a minute, this cannot be coincidence. That's my message.
Just so that you're clear on our position, we have done a lot of research into not only 9/11, but also the Oklahoma City bombing, and we believe both were instances of intentional state-sponsored terrorism.
With controlled demolitions being the culprit.
Well, I'm not going to argue with that theory because there is a ton of mounting evidence that lends credibility to that theory. I mean, when you look at the way that building number 7 fell, it is just hard, and so long after the other two buildings fell, it was never struck directly. The American people, if they sit down and actually look at this information, they're going to be hard-pressed to believe the official government story. Right. So I think what you guys are doing is a real public service. And my point is this, that if somebody woke up and had been asleep for, let's say, 100 years, and they started to all of a sudden try to get up to speed with what's going on in America today, they would come away with a very confused, it would be like that artwork of a few years back where, you know, in order to understand and see the picture, you had to kind of let your focus get real fuzzy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of the way it is today, because the media is owned and controlled and manipulated by a very small
right.
group of corporations, and
okay,
the American people have been conditioned, you know, mind-numbed, if
yep.
you will, just to believe this pap.
Well, Robert.
Yes, sir.
I will start at the beginning.
Okay.
And at the beginning, you dedicate the book to Jeanette Rankin, one of the first women in Congress.
Right.
And you also say that women should play a bigger role in rebuilding America. What role do you see women playing in the future, particularly with foreign policy?
Well, I think that, you know, we all have to start at the ground level. And the first thing that we have to do is we have to begin to educate ourselves. And so, you know, we have to begin to read and study and take the lead that we're going to understand the problem and look at the players and search for the truth.
You think women can keep us out of war?
I think that they can certainly change the direction of this government if they will take the time to look at the truth and to realize that the young men in this country have been cannon fodder and have been treated like cannon fodder for more than 100 years, and they are the ones that shed their lives and that lose their limbs and that come back home broken emotionally, mentally,
right,
psychologically.
Right, but women like Hillary Clinton aren't going to keep us out of war.
And plus,
there's no, you know, women don't have a monopoly on integrity or honesty, but we need that a compassionate side to look at the truth and to realize that the war card is the card that is constantly played, and to realize that. You know, this country was founded by people that said, stay out of the politics of the Europeans, for they are nations of eternal war.
And well, Bob, the way I see it is that, and I don't think it matters if it's a man or a woman or whatever, it depends whether they're in the cabal or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the big determinant. If they're part of these globalist New World Order elite, that's the determinant. And
course.
I think the way you start your book off, with this quote, you say, if my sons did not want war, there would be none. This came from the wife of Meyer Rothschild. She was also the mother of his 5 children that would eventually take over Europe. So this is what it all boils down to, is this cabal, whether someone belongs to it or doesn't.
You see, this is the most, one of the most interesting things that came out of my research was when you read the history of the 17th and the 18th and the 19th century in Europe, you realize that a very intelligent group of industrialist bankers, if you will,
mm-hmm.
figured out that they could become enormously wealthy simply by manipulating and maneuvering the governments of Europe into wars against each other. They lent them to money to finance the wars. They rented them the mercenary soldiers. This was just a business, and their whole goal was to kind of keep a balance of power. This way they could be sure that they got paid.
Right.
And this is, you know, for instance,
war's
hey, everybody's talking about the Chinese gorilla. Oh, we've got to be afraid of the Chinese. Well, if you remember back to the 70s, the gorilla was the Arabs. If you remember the 80s, the gorilla was the Japanese. So that the people that have taken control of this government are using fear, and before that they used the Soviets all along
mm-hmm.
to breed a society of fear that then will give them the power to manipulate the American people
right.
to do anything they want.
Okay. The Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberg Group, and other groups, other think tanks. American politics has been filled with members of these groups since the 20s, and in your book you list, since 1921, 23 secretaries of state have been in the CFR, 16 secretaries of defense, 15 directors of the CIA, and the last 8 presidents, including this one. Tell people about the Council on Foreign Relations. What do they need to know that they don't know, because most people have never heard of it?
That's right, and that's the saddest fact yet. The Council on Foreign Relations was founded by the money of the Rockefellers and the Morgans, and they were in cahoots with the Rothschilds. And these were the people that brought us the Federal Reserve. And the reason that they founded this was that they owned Woodrow Wilson. He was nothing more than a puppet doing their bidding. And they gave him the idea for the League of Nations. And when Congress voted it down, they felt like somebody slapped him in the face, and they vowed that this would never happen again. They formed the Council on Foreign Relations to infiltrate and to dictate policy in the government. And it was behind the what came next, which was FDR and the United Nations.
Let me interject for a second, because Woodrow Wilson, in my opinion, was the worst president this country has ever had. He's the one that got us into World War II, created the Federal Reserve, also the federal income tax. And the man that controlled Woodrow Wilson was named Colonel Mandel House, and his father was a representative of the Rothschilds during the Civil War. So this all leads back again to the Rothschilds, doesn't it?
Well, you know, their fingerprints are everywhere. They've done a great job of staying in the shadows. And the true power, this is why they're so brilliant. They stay in the shadows. But you're right. Woodrow Wilson, in terms of his deceit and cunning, I think that he was only surpassed in terms of being our worst president by FDR. Woodrow Wilson has said, in just plain English, he said, look, this man, Colonel Edward Mandel House, and I, we like think alike. We're like, you know, robots. We're like puppets. And in fact, Woodrow Wilson was the puppet, and Colonel Edward Mandel House was pulling the strings all along. So I think Woodrow Wilson, you know, may have been a little bit naive. I don't know if he was pure evil. I honestly believe that FDR was such an egomaniac and was such a power monger, and he knew exactly what he was doing, and that's why I would put him as our worst president ever.
Congress, for all intents and purposes, appears to be a sleeping duck, a lame duck. They look with disregard upon our open borders and the illegal immigration invasion, our out-of-control judiciary, among other things, including the UN. So how do we get around that when our politicians aren't listening to the will of the people?
Well, you know, I think you're being very kind and very generous when
I am.
You use the word sleeping. They have been corrupted. You know, if you remember when and of course, how could you remember because you weren't bored, but if you read the history, Charles Lindbergh Sr. was one of the few members of Congress at the time who absolutely, positively was against the Federal Reserve. He continued to say, look, this is wrong, this is corrupt, these people are going to control this government, and yet nobody listened to him. Maybe a few people did. And we've had less and less people over the years willing to take an honest stand on behalf of the American people. It has become a self-fulfilling corruption machine.
Yeah. Well,
and this is the genius, and this is the brilliant behind the global elite. And that's why people need to read this book, because if you look at it, it's easy to speculate, oh, this was just accident, or this was just happenstance or coincidence. But the lies, the propaganda, and the disinformation that has been perpetrated for 100 years, you see the same patterns repeat themselves time and time again. And that's what I tried to lay out in my book, was that this is the pattern which is so undeniable. And the politicians, most of them probably at some point in time, just realized, hey, I can't fight this, so I'm going to get rich
in
the meantime, and they just sold out, bottom line.
Now, before I go on, I want to give everyone your website. It's www.uniteamericanow.com, and I'm glad that you touched upon this subject, because the way we see things is world government is nothing more than a huge organized crime syndicate, and you point out very, very well in your book that some of America's most prominent families, names that we all know, made their fortunes through illegal activities such as drug running and also bootlegging and so forth. So tell everyone a little bit more about this concept.
Well, you see, people know about the Da Vinci Code, and the movie's going to be coming out soon, and I understand that Dan Brown is hiding away somewhere writing the sequel, which is going to take place in America. Now, he romanticized it way beyond what, you know, I mean, he is almost, in a way, he's doing a service because he made people aware of secret societies, but on the other hand, he's making it romantic like The Godfather.
Uh-huh.
The truth of the matter is that the secret societies, some of them were altruistic and had great, you know, humanitarian ideas at heart, but the bottom line is that power and corruption has become the rule that emerged out of the Middle Ages, and these are the groups of people that, you know, started and formed the East India Trading Company, which maybe people read about in their history books a long, long time ago, that was running opium to China. And there were two wars with China, because both times the Chinese said, look, we're tired of you addicting our peasants and you know, making huge profits smuggling opium into this country, and both times the Chinese lost.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these type of families, they amassed such wealth, and when the New World was formed, you know, they were here, you know, running slaves, running drugs, and then they decided, you know, let's do what Don Corleone is going to write about down the road. Let's go legitimate. Let's get into banking, because banking, you see, was their way of going legitimate without really changing their modus operandi. They were still criminals, but they found a very slick way to make even more money, and that was through the banking system. And so,
so let me ask you this, Robert, is any third-party candidate, independent candidate, a viable option in today's society, you know, considering what we have going on with vote scam and rigged elections?
Absolutely not. I think that, and I suggest in my book, the only alternative we have now is to unite the American people on an issue-by-issue basis. And I am firmly convinced that there is only one issue. There is only one issue which the American people, I think, almost unanimously can agree on, and that's that we have to secure our borders. 90% almost of every poll taken in this country, the American people say, please secure our borders, and yet both parties thumb their noses, and they come up with argument after argument
because
after
it's really
argument.
One party.
And I went down this weekend to Tucson, and I looked at the Minutemen organization, and I think these are as close to we have anymore as heroes. For instance, Chris Simcox and what he's doing. But we need to get the American people united behind one issue that they can possibly have a feeling of accomplishment, and that's this issue. And
so
if
how do we do that?
If we cannot secure the borders and get Americans to forget their differences of religion or sexual preference or race or you name it, then this government and this country is going to fall apart and shatter very quickly.
Right. I think the other issue that everyone or most everyone could agree on is that we have to get rid of the status quo.
Uh-huh.
We have to get rid of this two-party system, these Republicans and Democrats that have been bought, sold, and controlled now for decades.
Right. They all work for the same people.
Yeah. And in the same line, you write about George Soros. And you say how he uses the left and he uses the women's movement and the anti-war movement.
And he has the same goals as Bush.
Right,
that's
and he is one of these New World Orderers, but that's, you know, dividing and conquering the populace. And what his ultimate goal is to promote the New World Order, isn't it?
Well, there's no doubt about it. You know, Soros and Kissinger and Wolfowitz and Clinton, I mean, and Senior Bush, they were all members of the trilaterals, the Council on Foreign Relations, and oftentimes the Bilderbergs. Wolfowitz, Soros, and Kissinger all belonged to all three of those groups. George Sr. belonged to two of those groups. But getting back to your point about, you know, the two-party system, you have to start somewhere. And if you survey the landscape today, there is only one viable issue that I think we have any chance of uniting the American people on. It's a gut issue, it's a visceral issue, and it's a tangible issue. We have borders that are real, we have 8,000 people that are coming across illegally.
Right, let me ask you this then.
They are destroying our education, they are destroying our health care, and these are good people. Let me say first up, if I were living in Mexico, I would want to do the same thing. Why? Because there are more billionaires in Mexico than there are in the United States, and it's run by maybe four or five families. They're extremely corrupt, and so they are exporting the pressure on their system to reform, and they're sending it here as a means of destroying this great nation. And
so how do we do this, Robert? How do we bypass the major obstacle we face with the mainstream media? How do we get people to unite when they can't even unite on small things?
Well, that's what I'm saying. We have to have a seminal issue. We have to educate the people, and that's a difficult thing to do. We have to do it on a grassroots basis. And that's why I'm hoping that people will go to my website. I'm hoping that they'll read my book, because if they don't understand the big picture, and they don't understand that we are in the bottom of the ninth inning, Lisa, there's no doubt in my mind that we are in the end game. And Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor at Georgetown, and he wrote a book, Tragedy and Hope, all about this. He wrote it from the inside. He was an insider. And he said back in the 70s, there is no way that the American people are going to be able to win. The game is too far gone, and this was 30 years ago. Right now, we have one opportunity, and that's to unite behind the most obvious, the most visceral issue that we have, and that's the borders, and I think Chris Simcox and what the Minutemen are doing. If we pass this opportunity up and we start trying to get everybody to go here and to go there, we're playing into their hand. We have to take this government back one issue at a time.
We need a revolution in our thinking. Yeah.
And we agree with you about the Minutemen. So we'd like to thank you. This is Mr. Robert Raming. His book is War and Death of the American Dream. His website can be found at www.uniteamericanow. And, Bob, we just want to thank you for coming on Wing TV today.
Thank you so much, and congratulations to you for the hard work and the job you're doing. I wish you the best, and I hope that we can all unite America now.
Keep up the great work, Robert.
Thank you.
And tomorrow on Wing TV, as we said at the onset of this show, we're going to have Mr. Mark Farrell.
Right.
This was a sizzling interview, so make sure you tune into that. And until then, keep your eyes open, folks, because there's a lot going on.
See you then.